You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Atheistically Speaking. This is episode 91 with your host, Thomas Smith. Joining me for however long we can go on this thing is Bobby C. from No Religion Required. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, sir. How are you?
Good. Well, it's interesting. The listeners may hear me float away. My house might just, kind of float down the street because we've had some flash flooding and things. But So just letting anyone know, if you hear any gargling noises or if at one point I'm crying for help and sound like I'm drowning, don't panic. I'm probably fine.
I'm in Southeast Georgia, so I probably couldn't help you much from here.
You could call somebody. You could do something. Yeah,
I could call somebody. I'll call 911 for you.
But if the listeners hear it, that means I somehow posted the episode, so I'm fine. Long story short, I got through it. It's interesting. We got hit with a huge storm, which is great because this is the driest state, a huge drought. But when we get rain, it tends to just come all at once. Just a giant, pail pouring rain all over. So, I had several commenters say that they wanted me to get you on the show because you are not a retired police officer, as one commenter said, but a former police officer.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Is a distinction there, I suppose. Yeah, basically, it just means you're not old.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm not old.
Right. So dishonorably discharged. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I got the honorable from the Army and the police.
So. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. And so it seems like we share a lot of listeners. Now, I'm wondering if you can tell me about your show because I apologize. I'm not familiar. And I'm wondering if there's any other listeners who aren't familiar that might want to check it out. So feel free to give it a little plug.
Sure, absolutely. The show is called No Religion Required. We're based out of Savannah, Georgia. So it's kind of like a southern based redneck show. We talk a little bit about what's going on in the news. And also we do what is called an atheist Bible study. My co-host, Miss Ashley, she's never read the Bible before. Mm. So she's going through the Bible for the very first time. And it's very interesting to sit back and watch the facial expressions and hear the things that she says when she sees the things that are in the Bible. She is not an atheist. So she's, I am the only atheist in the group here. And she's reading the Bible. Excuse me. She's reading the Bible for the very first time. And listeners are getting an opportunity to listen to her make her change. She's kind of peeking her head out of the closet and looking around. And the listeners get an opportunity to listen as she's learning about different fallacies. And she's just learning more about the secular movement.
Interesting. So is she a Christian?
She is a former Christian. She's
just not quite atheist yet, I guess.
Right. I would put her more around the agnostic, okay. she just doesn't know.
Sure.
So she's at a point where she's like, I don't know. And to be honest with you, I don't care. So I'm like,
Needless to say though, she's likely surprised by what she's encountering in the Bible. Just how.
Very much surprised.
I can sort of relate to that.
Thomas Bible. You definitely can.
The number one surprise is just the sheer boredom. Honestly, I'm not even trying to be funny. Just the sheer boredom involved in trying to read it in the Old Testament. That's the most shocking thing to me. I would rather read about countless atrocities and just horrible things. At least I'd be, entertained. The pages would turn. But no, just boring.
Well, for this past show, she made it to Genesis 38, where
that's as far as she is. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
things still happen then. Just wait.
God killed a man because he ejaculated on the ground instead of his brother's wife.
Sounds like Onan.
Oh yeah, so she read that for the first time on this week's episode that was put out this past Sunday, and it's a very interesting listen.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I mean, I specifically was having you on in relation to the Ferguson news. Now, it turns out today, like not very many hours ago, there was no indictment, I guess,
right,
for the officer in New York who put a guy in a put Eric Garner in a chokehold and he died.
Yeah.
And so this it's very fresh news. So I'm not expecting in-depth analysis of that, but it's something we can touch on. And so I suppose let's just get right into it. What has been your take as someone with a bit of expertise on the Ferguson case?
Well, whenever I was asked to come on your show, I sit down and I read the over 120, God, I don't even know how many pages it was that I read last night on the
indictment evidence or the.
Yeah, it was. Is his name Dorian Johnson or something like that?
Oh, Dorian Johnson, his statement, the friend.
I read the interview that the grand jury had with him and him going in there and telling them everything that all from his side.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then I sit back and I read Darren Wilson's interview with the detective.
Yeah.
Wow. what two conflicting stories.
Right, right.
You know, there's so much conflicting stories in here. And a lot of people get confused when they think about a grand jury. A grand jury works for the prosecutor. Their job is strictly to gather evidence and testimony and decide whether or not there's enough evidence there to indict the officer. Whenever you look at a situation like that, and you have two conflicting stories, they have to make the decision which one is telling the truth.
Oh, and they do.
Yeah, and of course, the only two people that know for a fact what the truth is Darren Wilson and Michael Brown, and unfortunately, we will never hear his side of the story.
Right.
So those two are the only two that really know what happened. So when it came to them not giving the indictment, I was actually pretty shocked. And the reason I say that is I think the shooting from inside the car when he was being punched by Michael Brown, if there's any truth to that at all, the shots in the car, I think, are clearly justifiable. My problem lies with the shots later on.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Once Michael Brown moved away from he had a 2013 Tahoe. And once he moved away from the Tahoe, the threat was gone. Now, of course, Officer Wilson got out of the patrol vehicle and pursued Mike Brown, which, of course, he'd have to because, first of all, the man's been shot. And
yeah, yeah.
You just don't let a shot man run around.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so he had to. Now, my question for the officer, if I had an opportunity to question him, would be, was there anything else that you could have done besides lethal force once you were outside the vehicle? Because there are other things that could have been done. The officer had pepper spray on him. You know, did he have an Aspaton on him? And Aspaton is non-lethal. So is pepper spray. It's non-lethal. The man's already shot. Yeah. Now, whenever he started going toward the officer had the option of backing up. The officer in his testimony said that he was wasting time waiting for his backup to show up. That means that you could have backed up and kept backing away from Mike Brown, your backup would have been there in a matter of 30 seconds to a minute. Why the need to shoot? Now, whenever I went through the police academy, they preached, do not shoot an unarmed man. Now, the testimony said that Mike Brown had his hands inside his waistband.
Right, yeah.
Okay. And I could see what officer could take that as a threat. But as an officer, you're yelling, show me your hands. If he never brandishes a weapon, in my opinion, that's an unjustifiable shooting.
Yeah, I find the waistband thing hard to believe. It sounds like just the standard kind of, you know, they give that every time. Oh, he's moving towards waistband. It
right.
I mean, also, you've already gone through a conflict where it seems like if he had a gun, he would have used it already, right? I mean,
exactly. I mean, if he's standing at the window punching the officer and the officer shoots. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say that if I had a weapon on me and I was in his shoes, I would be shooting back.
Yeah, especially once you got free, you know, once you got away. I want to just ask you briefly. I don't know. Now, being a police officer, former police officer, that doesn't guarantee that you are an expert on grand juries. So I'm wondering, or does it? I mean, because my question is, does a grand jury have to evaluate who's telling the truth? Or do they just have to say, look, there's enough here. There's enough conflicting evidence. There's enough, troublesome evidence. Maybe we don't know who's telling the truth, but we can press charges. Can they say that? I really don't know. I'm not too familiar with grand juries.
Well, I think at some point they have to make a determination of whether or not the evidence that is presented from the eyewitnesses is the truth, or whether the officer's telling the truth. They have to come to some form of thought on what is true. Hmm. Now, is it their job to do it? Absolutely not. Their job is to look at the evidence and to look at all the interviews that they're able to have with people and determine through the evidence if they feel that there's enough evidence to indict the defendant, whoever the defendant might be. I had a chance to look at some of the eyewitness statements from the people around the neighborhood that said they saw what was going on. One said he wears glasses, but he didn't have his contacts in, so all he saw was figures. Mm-hmm. The other said he was hiding behind a tree. And I'm looking at these going, okay, the worst testimony you could ever have is eyewitness ceremony Everybody sees something different. So their job is to go through all of that. The prosecutor is there to answer any questions and to explain the law to them. So the prosecutor gets the grand jury together and says, okay, here's the evidence. Here's everything we have. Make the determination whether or not we should do an indictment or not. Now, what most people don't know is even if the grand jury does not indict, the prosecutor can still press charges if he feels fit.
Hmm. So it pretty much was in his hands. I mean, it seems to be by all accounts.
Yeah, it is in his hands, but he uses the grand jury to make that decision. Because what happens is once the grand jury says, yes, we want to indict, it goes to trial quicker because you no longer have to present the evidence to the trial judge.
Oh, I see. It's like a procedural kind of shortcut or something. Yeah,
knocks out that step. But if that attorney decides to go against a grand jury and go ahead with the indictment anyway and press charges, now that prosecutor has to present evidence in front of that judge that he thinks should allow for the charges. The problem is the grand jury's already looked at it, and no prosecutor in his right mind would go against a grand jury, or I would think that.
Huh. So then how do you explain, or I mean, not that you necessarily know, but what is your guess as to why, and I've read some answers, but what's your guess as to why when it's a civilian, grand jury pretty much always indicts, when it's a police officer, almost never?
I don't know.
Yeah. It is weird.
It is weird, and it's definitely something to think about, you know, because when you look at, for instance, this New York City police officer, he was not indicted, and it's clear that he was choking the guy. I don't know why it is that the grand jury does not want to indict police officers. I don't understand it.
It doesn't make any sense, because like even if you take a random sampling of people, it would seem like, you know, I just based on media and anecdotally, it's very surprising, just because it seems like so many people are anti-police, or at least anti, you know, police violence. How could it be that it always, every time there's a police officer, it happens to be a police friendly jury? It must be the prosecutor, right? I mean, it's in his or her hands to kind of show the evidence in a certain way and direct kind of the flow of how things go, right? I mean, they must have a huge influence over that.
Well, I think there's a bias there.
Yeah.
Because I really do. And I don't know what I can say that I think the bias is on the fact that they're looking at a police officer who is supposed to be highly trained. Okay. I went through a lot of training, you know, going through the police academy and how to deal with certain situations. And that police officer is held to a higher standard than the average civilian would be, simply because of what they deal with and the things that they see. Yeah. So I don't know if that bias is there, and that's why. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But see, it's easy for people to see police officers in a bad eye. You know, they never call the police just to tell them how good of a job they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. They hate you until they need you.
Right.
And then once they need you, you're their best friend. And when you're done, guess what? They hate you again. but the problem is they're hating the uniform. They never take the time to look at the person behind the badge. And That's and I think that's a problem. They forget that you're a person. All they see is a badge and a gun and what you represent. But I think you have to take the time to look beyond the badge and look behind a gun belt and see that standing in those shoes and in those boots as a husband, a father, a son. You know, it's a person. I think that'll change the way a lot of people look at police officers. They have a job to do. They're trained to do it. And most do it well. But the problem is they just, like I said, they hate you until they need you.
Yeah. It does seem like there's a lack of accountability. You know, I do think there are a lot of police officers who obviously do their job well. And I will even say I tend to have a bit of bias pro police. But it's just not anything that's reasonable in these cases. You know, I mean, I think if, you know, I would be the kind of person who, if there's a long police chase and they tackle the guy and the, you know, the guy happens to get a little hurt, I honestly am not too terribly upset about that if it's a matter of a bruise or two. But when you just are murdering people, like there's no excuse for that. And there's it really isn't a laughing matter. I'm sorry for laughing, but I agree with what you said on your analysis of the shooting. It that was kind of how I was looking at it too. The car, I think, is if it happened how he said, totally justified, because you just can't, you know, you can't punch a police officer. It's just not something that you can do. But once you get outside of the car and once you have room to maneuver, the suspect is shot. You're not, you know, like you got to have a bit of an advantage there, I would think. That's where, you know, the bias I might have toward the police officer cuts off there. I mean, once it's clearly it's in your control, you don't have license to just end people's lives. So, and then the thing with this New York police officer, a lot of people are saying, and it's pretty disappointing because this was caught on film. And one of my main things has been that I wish every police officer wore a camera, but this event is showing, well, sometimes even with full camera footage, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like,
right.
You and I both probably need more time to delve into. Hopefully they release the evidence. I don't know. I'm not sure if they're going to. I think it took maybe a day last time there's going to be all kinds of these cases. last week, you know, or whatever it was.
And there's 1,000 pages to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully they release the evidence again. And I really just have no idea like what the angle could have been on this one. The guy has him in a chokehold. It's not a move that's not in the training. It's you know, trained against. You're not supposed to put anyone in a chokehold as a police officer, according to what I'm reading. I mean, was that any part of your training?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Next, you're gonna go ahead.
No, we were trained more on pressure point techniques. Now there are pressure points around the neck area that you can use to subdue someone that would very much make it look like a chokehold. What you're doing is you're using pressure point, pressure point techniques. Now chokehold, absolutely not. The one thing that shocked me was when we were taught the hair grab method. Ugh. and basically what that is, I apologize for the phone in the background.
Oh, it's not a lightsaber battle. That's a, okay.
No.
As long as you're not getting chopped by a lightsaber right now, then we're good.
No, she forgot to mute her phone. But the hair grab method is where you grab them by the back of their hair. You're not pulling. You now have a handful of hair, and to them to stay still. If they move, it pulls their hair.
Huh. Yeah. That reminds me of early UFC. You know, they learned pretty quickly not to have long hair in that thing, because it was in the rules that you could pull a person's hair. And I remember one early UFC fight. The guy just pulled the guy's hair out, and it's like, oh, well, it wasn't against the rules, so I guess you can do that. Pretty effective.
But no, the chokehold, I was never taught in the police academy, hey, you're allowed to put them in a chokehold. You know, that's a no-go.
Yeah, it just – it's so insane too, because I understand that things escalate sometimes. Like, I get it when you're in a heated situation, but the guy – it's not a violent offense. It's not anything. I mean, the guy was selling cigarettes illegally. Like, what kind of, why does that have to escalate to three officers are like on top of him? And one is, you know, choke it. Like, that's insane. I don't – this one – so I just want to make very clear. Now, it's possible there's some evidence that, I you know, that could come up, I guess. But, yeah. I mean, it's on video. It doesn't look good. The only angle I can think of, and this is just speculation, is if they're trying to say that if the suspect, you know, Eric Garner, didn't have a condition, he would have been fine. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, maybe if, you know, if you shove a guy and he has a heart attack, it's not murder, you know, technically. But that's the only angle I can come up with. You know, he had asthma or something.
We don't know that.
What's that?
I said the responding officer doesn't know what medical conditions the person has come to has.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So maybe the jury decided, this is pure speculation, but maybe they decided he could have died as a result of the, you know, stress of the situation and the, you know, I don't know. I mean, I really am just grasping at straws trying to think of what the jury could have been thinking, because I really don't get this one. The Wilson one, I can kind of understand. I really can. I mean, I still would have definitely preferred an indictment, but it's at least fathomable to me why a jury might not have voted that way. But with this one, I am just at a loss, and it very clearly is a problem. And it's not going away anytime soon.
Well, the problem is there's no rhyme or reason for what grand juries do. I mean, it's a group of people that come together. They all have their own thoughts. They all have their own biases, and they have their own worldview. And when you get those people together in a room and you get 12 of them, and you want a 2/3 majority to get an indictment, at least 9 out of 12 need to say yes. And you're dealing with different personalities and different people. And it's amazing because you sit back and look at the evidence. One person may see something and somebody else will see something different. What I call good may not be good to you. Mm. So you get a lot of conflicts within a jury.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so you're dealing with people, you know, and people are flawed. So
but why are they always flawed in the direction of the police officer every time? that's so weird.
I will never, for the life of me, I'm a former police officer, and I promise you, I will never figure that out. I have stood in front of several grand juries just from things that I've been involved in as an officer. Hmm. And I can tell you, all three went my way.
Looks like we have a little bit of a Skype issue. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so you said all three went your way was kind of the last thing.
Yeah, I've stood in front of three grand juries throughout my law enforcement career about things that I was involved in. Thank goodness none of them were shooting.
I was gonna say, how many unarmed men have you gunned down, sir? We're gonna get to the bottom of this.
I could probably count on both hands the number of times that I actually had to unholster my weapon. Mm. You know, my philosophy was I treat people the way that I would want to be treated. You know, I want to give respect to that person because I want respect back.
Yeah.
And what I found was if you respect people, they will respect you back. You don't have to get out the car and be a total asshole.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely true. I mean, it's true that when it comes to police, I firmly believe that no matter what kind of an asshole they are, you know, they're the friggin' police and you got to listen to them. But
yes, sir. No, sir.
You know, that's how I deal with it. I'm not yes or no, sir, but I'm just, you know, what if I get pulled over? I'm just, yeah, whatever you want. I'm giving you no attitude, whatever. You're the police officer. I get it. And you know, of course, me being me, I haven't had to deal with it to the extent that other people have, of course. But when you're an officer and you go out with just a chip on your shoulder, I'm sure it doesn't help the situation. I'm sure things escalate more than they would if it was just, you know, just even a neutral stance, you know, like you said. I mean, treating people how you'd want to be treated, I think that could probably go a long way. But it's something that you can't – I don't know how you would enforce that. It just has to be a encouraged or a cultural thing, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's all according to the person wearing the badge, because I had several officers that I worked with that the badge gave them a God complex, you know, because they had a badge, they were untouchable. And those people are very dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, they're very dangerous to be around because they are above the law. Instead of being someone who's to enforce the law, they are above it because they wear a badge. We had several people like that, and I try to stay pretty well clear of those guys because the reason I say that is because most of the calls that came across the radio that were officers needing assistance, it was those guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a guy who always gets in a fight at the bar, but it's never his fault. You know, it's like,
It's never his fault. And for the officer, I'm the police and you're going to do what I tell you to do. Shut up and do it. That is not a good attitude to have.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, at all. So me, I never really, like I said, I could count on both hands a number of times. I actually had to take my weapon out of my holster and actually point it at someone.
Now, I'm curious. I want to ask you, this might seem a little just miscellaneous kind of stuff. From an officer, from a former officer, what is the training with your weapon? I mean, because so many times there's, you know, the whole clip is emptied and people think, why did you need to shoot, you know, more than once? I've heard people say, well, it's your training. You empty your whole clip. Is there anything you can say on that?
Well, sure. There's plenty I can say.
General kind of gun. Yeah. Training stuff.
Yeah. Well, I will start out with this. I heard one time they asked the officer, why did you shoot him 8 times? He said, because he didn't fall after 7. Okay. That is not a good philosophy at all.
Well, unless you're dealing with zombies, I guess.
Right. As an officer, you go through a lot of firearms training, a lot of it.
I would hope.
Yeah, you do. But you are taught center mass. Meaning if you're going to pull the trigger, pull the trigger to kill. The thing is, do not pull that trigger unless the person across from you has a weapon in their hand. Now, according to, I don't know, every state may be different, but from the state that I live in, there is justifiable shootings within the department. Those justifiable shootings would be a good one, like I said, from the vehicle of Darren Wilson. The guy was overpowering. If he had the ability to knock the officer out, next thing you know, he has the officer's weapon and can use the officer's weapon against him. That is a justifiable shooting. But we were taught you never, ever shoot an unarmed man if you can help it.
Yeah.
Now, we go through a lot of ballistics training. We go through a lot of firearms training as far as target training. And we also go through how to, I guess you can call it almost, what's the word I'm looking for? How to talk someone down out of a situation. There's many times, and I'm sure you've seen that police video, where the officer is pointing his gun at someone that has a gun pointed back at him, but he won't take the shot. You ever seen those videos?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. One video, the guy pulled out a rifle out of his pickup truck. The officer had justifiable reason to shoot that gentleman with the rifle.
Right.
And the guy with the rifle was shooting at the officer. And people would look at that and go, why the hell is he not firing back? I was one of them. You know, but then you have those videos like the female officer that took one hit from that gentleman and he put her on her back with one hit. He was unarmed and he could have easily taken the weapon off that female officer and killed her with her own weapon. Sure. So we're taught how to use it, how to carry it. You never put your finger on the trigger unless you're planning on pulling it.
Yeah. So that is one question. I think I had that part right. So there's no training to your knowledge that you need to empty your clip necessarily. It's just, but one thing that I did think was true is, If the gun's out, I mean, if you're ready to fire, that means you have to be okay with killing the person. I mean, there's center mass. There's not a lot of shooting hands or anything like that. And that was originally months ago. I got that wrong and someone corrected me and said, well, there's some stuff about this, why you can't just, you know, shoot to disarm someone. And it makes a lot of sense. And that I totally accept now because it makes sense that you know, it's too risky. It's hard to hit exactly where you want to hit. So from that part, I'm comfortable with. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, it looks great in the movies.
Right.
You know, you shoot the guy in the leg, you know, and you apprehend a suspect. But the fact of the matter is when you're in a situation, your adrenaline's pumping, chances are your hands are shaking some because of your adrenaline. And you're not going to take the chance to try to shoot someone in a leg and miss. Next thing you know, you've hit an innocent bystander. Yeah. Now you have more problems. Right. So they train when you're doing target training, center mass.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Right. If you're going to pull the trigger, you better be fully ready to know that you are taking a life. Right. And that is one of the hardest aspects of police work, is knowing that there may come a time that you have to take someone's life. And that's a tough pill to swallow, even for officers. That's why police departments have psychiatrists on staff, because of that. Because the police officer is a person. And people don't think about that aspect. You took someone's life. You took someone's son, their brother, their nephew, their grandson. He was a person that had a family, and you took their life. Now, sure, it was in the line of duty. It was him or you. But you still have to deal with the fact that you killed someone.
Right.
That's a hard pill to swallow, brother.
So, you know, of course, I'm definitely sympathetic to that part. I'm wondering, did it ever, what was the worst situation you got in? Did you ever have to make any decisions like that?
Thankfully, I've never had to shoot someone. Hmm. I have situations where I was shot at. That is a scary situation.
Yeah.
You know, I had a call one night. I was called to a domestic dispute. The dispatcher said, you know what? We can hear the man striking the woman. Get there. And when you get to a call like that, you don't have to knock to walk in.
Right.
But normally when you go to a domestic dispute, you wait on your backup because you never know what you're getting into. Well, I'd been an officer maybe a year. You know, I'm still kind of wet behind the ears. Mm-hmm. And your adrenaline gets pumping. You know, this man, he's beating this woman. Get in there and stop it. Well, your training is you never pull directly in front of the house that you're going to, because you never know if it's an ambush or what's going on. So you park like a house down and then you walk up. Well, I was walking up. It was a double wide trailer kind of out in the country lined. And there was a line of bushes that separated the two homes. And when I come around the corner to the first bush, someone was on the back corner of the trailer and shot at me.
Oh, wow.
from the back corner. I never saw the guy. It's 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. We're out in the middle of the country. It's dark. All you have in your hand is a flashlight.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. And you're not expecting someone shooting at you. You're going to a domestic. You're going to help someone. All I saw was the muzzle blast, and then I heard the shot go by my head.
Oh, man.
You know, so you
what happened? Well, you got me. I've hooked in the story now. Now I want to know who was shooting at you. Was it the guy? Was it a neighbor or something?
No, you could hear the fight inside the trailer. I still don't know who shot at me. Of
really?
Course, that, yeah, I still don't know. And they never caught the guy. Hmm. I wasn't about to go running to the corner of the trailer.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So I got into what is called a low position, pulled out my weapon, and I didn't know if the next shot was coming. So I'm not going to expose myself. Of course, I call out over the radio, shots fired. And then the cavalry comes. Everybody comes.
Okay. So you had to wait for backup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. In that situation, you don't. It's not like the movies. You're RoboCop walking out there. You know, you wait for your backup, yeah. And when you yell shots fired, it's not too long before someone's there with you. Which was part of the thing that got me with the Darren Wilson thing. The testimony said he said shots fired over the radio. Come on, I mean, it's what, 30 seconds, and trust me, the cavalry is there. Now, of course, we cleared the area and we were able to get inside the house and arrest the man. And trust me, the woman was beaten to a bloody pulp by the time we got there. But then that is when you make a decision. Do you run in the house to break up the fight, or do you make sure that the threat outside is taken care of first? You have to make that decision.
Yeah.
My decision was, the man shot at me. I heard the bullet go by my head. There's no way in hell I'm walking out into the clear open. It's not happening. So I had to sit there until somebody got there to help me clear the area to even get into the house where the domestic dispute was happening in the first place.
Wow. Yeah. I can't even imagine. I mean, that must be really, really tough. There must be so many times of just judgment calls, you know, and I know you have a lot of training, but you know, training can't prepare you for everything, and that's difficult.
Well, you have to make so many judgment calls within one situation.
Yeah,
because the whole situation can change in an instant. You know, everything looks fine, and then the next instant, all hell breaks loose. You know, I've seen it many times. You go into the house of a fight and you arrest a man. Next thing you know, you have his wife jumping on your back, yeah, trying to beat you because you're arresting her husband, and he was beating the hell out of her. You know, you get situations like that. So you have to be able, what the military says, adapt and overcome. And you have to adapt to those changes, and hopefully you make the right decision, and hopefully you do the right thing. And if you don't do the right thing, you have to pay the consequences for that. And that's one of the things that I think Officer Wilson is going to deal with, is I don't think it's quite over for him, because now comes the civil suit.
Yeah.
You know, the family's going to sue.
Yeah.
You know, and rightly so.
Yeah. And definitely in the New York one too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering, it might put you on the spot a little bit, but
no, that's okay.
Is there anything that you've thought of over the years? Now, you were an officer for 7 years, you said, right?
Right, 7 years.
Now, how many years ago was that?
I got out of law enforcement in the early 2000s.
Okay. So, yeah it's been a little while. Is there anything in light of these kind of incidents, is there any critique of police training that you have, or do you see it as rather people not applying their training correctly? I mean, is there anywhere where you think the training falls short, or is it mainly bad decisions, bad officers, that sort of thing when this happens?
I think it could easily be a little bit of both. You know, because you're going to fall back on your training, but you also have to make a rash decision in a hurry. And I think what happened was, especially when it came to Officer Wilson, I know more about that than the New York cop. The thing with Officer Wilson is I think what happened was he got into what is called tunnel vision, and he made a bad decision. Now, his training should have taken over, but there are times, man, when you're in those situations, your training only takes you so far. So when it gets to that point, you have a decision to make. And that's where he was. When Michael Brown started walking back toward him, he had a decision to make. Can I go non-lethal? Can I keep backing away until my backup gets here? I don't see a gun. Do I kill the man? Do I not? He's already injured. I'm not so injured. You know, and they talk about the size of Michael Brown. Well, yeah, he was what, 6'5"? The officer was 6'4", so he wasn't much bigger.
Yeah.
Than Wilson. He was 1 inch and 50 pounds bigger. So
that's bigger enough for me, but yeah, I mean,
yeah, but
I don't want to fight a guy 50 pounds, you know, heavier than me.
No, but that's part of the job of what you sign up for. You sign up for that situation. I'm 6'2", 220. And if I come up against someone that's 6'4", 300, I still have to handle that situation.
Yeah, you have to handle it effectively, and you can't, you know, I don't know. I mean, all I'm saying there is that I think 50 pounds is, I think it's fair to say, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of weight. It's fair to say, especially coming from, you know, I've done wrestling and a bit of, you know, a bit of grappling myself. 50 pounds is a lot. So if it comes down to it, it is a physical advantage. I'm not saying that justifies anything. That's not what I meant to say at all. I just mean, I accept the officer feeling physically threatened by someone 50 pounds heavier.
Well, yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Of course.
All right. So that's, I'm going to have to cut it off there. And apologies, it's a little bit of an awkward cut, I know, but that's sometimes the way the timing works. But I will make it up to you patrons by making sure Thursday is available very early. So Thursday's show will be available quite early via Patreon in the bonus feed. If you want to get a hold of that, go to patreon.com/atheist. Thank you guys so much for your patronage. I really appreciate it. Oh, and in Thursday's episode, I'll make sure to catch up on my Patreon thank yous, because I've been missing those due to recording at odd times and all that, so I need to catch up. So, yeah, be sure to send in your comments for the first part, and I'll try to address them in part two, and we'll see where we go. So, fun stuff. All right, I will talk to you guys on Thursday.